Before we begin this episode, we would first of all like to thank all of our listeners for their endless support. We would also like to invite you to visit us on our website at www.preptgrind.com, where you can gain access to all of our Pre-PT Grind platforms, as well as your own Pre-PT Grind ebook, free ebook, titled The Top 10 Tips to Get into PT School. Our purpose with current and future content is to provide you with everything you need to be a stellar DPT school candidate. We look forward to serving you more and more. Enjoy the rest of this episode.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Pre-PT Grind podcast. This is where we help you decide, prepare, and transform into becoming not just the best DPT student, but the best future physical therapist you can be as well. On this episode, we have a very special guest, Dr. Stacy Fruth. She is the department chair for Western Michigan University. And just a side note before we get started, her book, she wrote a textbook, or is her your name's on it. So I used this textbook in PT school. And when I saw that it was you that wrote it, I was like, what? Because I used to think, like, of course, in grade school and middle school, we just get textbooks from nowhere. And we're like, where do these textbooks come from? Do they come from the sky, from the stork? They just show up on our desk. And I just never thought that I would be talking to someone who wrote a wide-used textbook that I used in PT school on a podcast. So just that is, it's like, what? So welcome, Dr. Fruth, to the podcast. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, thank you. Please come, all my students do, so you might as well. We're colleagues, right?
Exactly, so, that's true.
Yeah, that's how I like to be thought of, so see it is.
Perfect. So first question we usually ask our guests, and we'll do the same thing with you. How did you even, now that you're in this position that you're in as, you know, big department chair and everything that you've done, how did you even start? How did you even find physical therapy and start on this path?
By mistake. So I was at the University of Michigan, graduated with my bachelor's in kinesiology. And shortly before grad, I was like, what am I going to do with this? And I didn't have an answer. So I went on to grad school and my master's program for exercise science. And towards the end of my tenure there, I was like, what am I going to do with this? I didn't have a great answer. And so I just happened to have a friend who was also a physical therapist and discovered a profession and immediately fell in love with it. Like, where's this been my whole time? And then I applied to schools very naively, had a great GPA, stellar student, and I didn't get in. My first actual real failure in academia, and I had to take a year off. I applied to 17 schools the next year. I got into 15 with really not doing anything different, honestly. I retook a course or two that I don't even think I needed to retake. But anyway, got into 15, had to choose. Chose the University of Indianapolis and was, the rest is history. Enjoyed it, loved it, never regretted it.
So you understand actually some of the students who might be applying to your
program. Yeah. Oh my gosh, yes. Oh yeah.
So how, it kind of cut off, but how many did you apply to the first time again?
Four.
Four the first time, then 17. Okay. The second
17. Yes.
So what made you make that jump? You just tried to, you know, scan the horizon and make sure you got into any schools. And I know you said you didn't do much different, but anything else you can think of that helped you get into 15 out of 17 schools that second time?
Well, again, remember this is in the dark ages. So this is a long time ago. But no, I did more homework. I was extremely naive. My first go around, I had been very successful at everything I had ever applied for. I got in flying colors, and I mean, it was my first reality check about life, and it was devastating. But it made me take a look at myself. It made me take a look at the world. It made me take a look at this profession. Like, who are you not to let me in? Like, oh crap, it's on me. Sorry. So I mean, it was just a lot of soul searching and a lot of homework that I had to do, and I did it.
Wow. So I had to apply twice as well, and I don't know if this is the same for you, but I don't even really remember it until someone brings it up, like in a conversation or if it comes by. Because a lot of times we get students and our audience messaging us like, I didn't get in. I have to apply to all these schools, or this is my first time. And I don't want that to happen to me. I just want to apply one and done. And at a sense, I understand because I know what it was like. I was there. It was super real. But now being at this point where I am now, it's like, it's not really going to matter. Once you get in and your career is, you know, 10 years, 15 years down the line, you can be wherever you want to go. You're going to be wherever you want to be. And that'll just be an afterthought.
Sure.
It sounds like it was the same for you.
For sure. And honestly, it's the same thing when I mean, this is a little off topic, but when I have students who are really struggling in the program and they have to take a year off or they have to appeal to come back again, it's the same thing. It's just this level of devastation. And then they come back around and they realize, you know, some things that they needed to work on and rediscover themselves. Usually they're rock stars. And that year, you know, it's like, it's an afterthought. You don't even remember it, just like this. It's like, it happens. And it makes you a better person. It just does. Bottom line.
Yeah, while we're on that thought, actually, with the students who have to, you know, appeal and they don't, you know, hold up a certain standard of GPA and all that stuff in PT school, however much you can disclose, of course, why is that even the case? Because I know if I was a pre-PT listening to this now, I'm like, why, you know, if I fail out, you would be losing that spot in tuition dollars. Why would you even let me fail out, if that even makes sense? Is there something schools have to uphold, certain standards, or is that just for certain schools? How does that even work?
Oh, no, absolutely. So CAPTI, our accrediting body, is very adamant that we are discerning. So we, you know, we can't necessarily weed out the students who aren't going to be safe or who can't put, you know, some, you know, who are great book smart, but they can't problem solve. They can't put it together when a patient is in front of them. And it's our job and our duty to the profession to identify those students. It's our thing if we can, but some students aren't cut out for it. And our accrediting body makes us be, you know, we in effect take an oath to our profession that we have standards. And a GPA of a 4.0 or a GRE score, you know, combined of, you know, 50, whatever, that doesn't mean you're going to be a good PT. You know, it just means that you can study and you're smart.
Wow.
So we have other pieces that mean something and professionalism. You know, it's a big thing. If you are going to be arrogant and if you can't respect others, it's our duty to not let you go forward. So we have academic standards and we have professional behavior standards. And many faculty's eyes, they're pretty equal.
Wow. So I was going to get into this later, but hey, we're here. So might as well go into it now. So a lot of times students, you know, they're like, my GPA is not that high, GRE is not killing it, all this stat stuff. What else do you look at? What's that other part that you were just talking about that you hold so valuable besides stats?
A lot of it is again, the ability to be professional. And that doesn't mean you have to be straight-laced all the time. I mean, I'm one of the most laid-back people you can imagine, but I can bring it when I have to. And that means in front of a patient and in front of other healthcare colleagues, you know, you respect the profession. So professionalism is one. communication, the ability to communicate and look somebody in the eye and hold a conversation and not look at your phone is another one. I look for resilience. I look for times when people have failed. PT school is hard. You know, remember that?
Jeez. Oh.
And really the students who have the most trouble are the ones who are just terrified of failure, thinking that failure means the end instead of failure means my ability to learn from it and grow from it. The student who has sailed through everything in life is the one who worries me. Students who have fallen down and picked themselves back up, those are the ones that tend to appreciate the struggle a little bit more.
Wow. So how do you tend to weed that out in the application? Because you're just reading a piece of paper, really. You guys have a very, I try to get it across to a lot of pre-PTs, but sometimes they just hear me and Joseph all the time just talking. It's like, whoo, whatever. I'm just trying to get in. Tell me what I got to do. But it's like you guys have a hard job. You're just looking at these pieces of paper. You don't know who this person is. You don't know who they're back. You don't know anything. So going off their application, how do you tend to weed that out? Is it their experiences, essays, letters of recommendation? How do you do that with such a difficult job?
The analytic part of me says our accrediting body makes us defend our admission standards. And so the more objective and measurable those admission standards are, the easier they are to defend to our accrediting body. So that's why every single program is going to have a GPA minimum. Every program is going to tell you, well, most programs, to take the GRE, and they score applicants. Because it's objective. If it was just, you wrote a great essay and I liked you, well, that's my opinion. And how am I going to defend that to CAPT when they want something definitive? So at least my opinion, we start off with the objective. And yes, it is, you know, GPA. And I don't have a minimum score that I require, but we do score, we give various points for GRE. Verbal higher actually weighted in our program than quantitative or analytical. But then that's the other reason why I am very insistent on an interview. And there are some programs who don't do it, and there are other programs who do. And most of my Twitter conversations have been around, you know, thank you for keeping this, the interview, clinicians want us to keep the interview. I will never give it up personally. It's my chance to meet my fellow students who will then become my fellow colleagues. I think that's kind of cool. But it's also, so it's a weed in and a weed out. It's, you meet the students that just based on their personality and their drive and their initiative and their attitude and their communication, their confidence, like, you have to be in my program. And then the afterthought is, oh, by the way, what's your GPA and what's your GRE?
That's it.
And I'm like, oh, all right, well, you qualified, but I want you. I want you to represent my profession, and I want you to represent my program. I can equally have a 4.0 super high GRE that sits in front of me and berates some people in the profession, can't communicate, can't hold a thought, can't be professional in the moment. Just behavioral wise, that I send red flags up the pole. And you know, we have a disqualifying factor. So it would not matter what your GRA or GPA is or GRE. So I am sitting in front of somebody or berate other healthcare professionals or is in some way just very disrespectful, then we have a means of disqualifying that individual based on interview. regardless of GPA, GRE, and that's a protection to our profession. Right. Now, we also realize some of that can be taught. Some of it has to be a realization, and sometimes students aren't aware of their behavior. We get that. But sometimes it's also a gut that this student will not be a fit for our program. Maybe a different program, but not for our program. Mm.
So this is just kind of a side question to all of that, because that was a lot. So it's, how do you weed that out before the interview? Or is it just like, hey, they look good on paper, we just got to invite them for an interview, and that's how you go from there?
That's super hard to do, which is why I will always keep right. The interview.
Gotcha.
Sometimes on a rare occasion, we'll get a letter of recommendation that sparks our interest in that regard. But we also realize that most students are going to pick people who give them a good recommendation. I mean, we aren't naive to that. sometimes you can pick it out of an essay, but frankly, we don't read the essays prior to the interview. Now, other programs will, particularly those that don't have an interview, they will find some way to score, the essay to some extent. You probably don't want to hear your PPTs, but so we're aware that with all of the help that's being given for essay writing, how can I be assured that that's even a, or that's the student's actual independence, how much guidance was required? So I don't want to discount by any means the essay. I've read some inspiring ones, but we have to take that with a grain of salt. Knowing the amount of sharing that's in the internet and all that. So that was a long answer.
No, I loved it. So going in a slightly different direction before we tackle some more of that tough hitting stuff. Let's go into your textbook that I mentioned earlier. How did you even get into the thought of wanting to write a textbook? How did that come up?
Well, again, I just walk along life a little naive sometimes. When I first got a faculty position at the University of Indianapolis, I was thrilled. I mean, it's what I wanted to do, so excited, just yay, dream come true. And then I'm assigned courses, and first thing I said was, okay, well, where's the textbook? Who's used the textbook? Well, there isn't one. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean there's not a textbook? And lo and behold, there wasn't. And then I went searching out there on the magic internet, a textbook that would cover this content, and it simply didn't exist. And so I put together, as frantically as I could, a course packet. It's 38 pages, and I taught from it. And then the next year, it was 50-some pages. And then the next year, it was 70-some pages. And then at some point in time, somebody, one of my mentors, said, well, why don't you just publish this if there's really nothing out there? And I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. And then I hook up with a publishing company and have no idea how much work it's going to be, which is an insane amount of work. But it just became a passion then, and it was a really cool thing just knowing there wasn't a textbook out there that really covered the basics of an interview, of a patient interview, and then how to do a full-fledged basic patient examination. Everybody's writing on these big musculo techniques or neuro techniques or PED techniques, but nobody was writing at the basics. And so I just did it. That's the bottom line story.
I love it. And if you guys are wondering what the name of her textbook is, it's Fundamentals of Physical Therapy Examination, purple book, knee half flexed and all that stuff. So while you're listening to this episode, Google it, look it up. If you can't find it, you're not looking for it. So that's, like I said at the beginning, that's super cool, because I was like, this woman wrote a textbook and she was doing this and that. And oh my gosh, no wonder you're the department chair for this school. So on that note, tell us more about your program at Western Michigan University.
Okay, super excited to share this. So I started at Western almost 2 years ago. They hired me to build their program from the ground up, and that's what I'm in the process of doing. So starting from absolutely nothing, no curriculum, no faculty, no policies, no building, no nothing. And we are less than a year out from welcoming our first cohort. We anticipate they will start in late June of 2019, assuming all goes well with accreditation. Lots to happen there. So since then, I have hired now, as of last week, I have hired all of my faculty. Really, really excited about this team. Just thrilled beyond belief about who decided to come play in our sandbox. So faculty's hired. We have a building that was renovated specifically for our program. So they took all the PT stuff into consideration in terms of lab size, and I have a nice budget or equipment budget to buy all new equipment. We'll get a research lab that's still under development, but we'll have that. Built the curriculum, and that was from many, many years of studying curriculum and being faculty in a program, and then progressing to program director and chair in that program. I learned a lot about curriculum, and so we are we're going with a 2.5-year program. It is a straight through, start to finish. Only the really standard breaks of, you know, around holiday break, spring break, but none of the 6-week breaks or 8-week breaks that some programs break. We have it's 110 credit hours. Our students will be able to graduate prior to most of the surrounding schools. We have three clinical, full-time formal clinical rotations. They are a minimum of 10 weeks. So we don't have any of the short clinical rotations. And that's because we've listened to clinicians who don't like the short rotations. They prefer the longer ones. So we have a 10, 10, and a 12. I'm really excited about the curriculum. The faculty I have here on board is really excited about it. We're working on finalizing syllabi and course objectives and all that right now. 30 students per cohort. And I came from a program that was between 48 and 50. You get that high, it gets to be miserable. I actually really enjoy getting to know my students personally, and it's very hard to do that with a large class size. So we're at a class size of 30. That'll feel nice and comfortable. That is it in a nutshell. I wish it was that simple to explain to Capti, but it's not.
So how do they apply?
But I think it's going to be really good.
Perfect. So how do they apply to your program, and when's the deadline?
Okay, so we are not in PTCAS. That is something that everyone should know. We are not allowed to be in PTCAS our first year. So we can't apply to be in CAS until we have candidacy status, and that won't happen until spring. So we're going the old school route, and go to our website, click on apply. It's that simple. So it's traditional. It's nothing fancy. It's apply to the university, and then we have a small supplemental application, and we tried to make it as PT Cast-like as we could, knowing that students were also applying to PT through PT Cast. So yeah, you have to go to our website. It's easy to find. Just search Western Michigan Physical Therapy and it'll pop right up. But you can also see our facilities and our faculty and our curriculum's up there. So it's pretty much a functional website. So any other information is right there.
Perfect. So for the, I don't want to say advanced pre-PT, but I'll just call them that. So for the advanced pre-PT who knows all about accreditation and has questions about those, I'm sure they could contact you and your staff about further questions. But sure, for them and some other pre-PTs who might not know about it, can you just give us a quick rundown on how that works and how the timeline is for students interested in applying?
In accreditation, right?
Correct.
Okay. So we are applying for accreditation through CAPTE, so the Commission on Accreditation of Physical Therapy Education. It is a long and arduous process. The first step is notification that we want to do this. That's done. Right now, we are in the midst of applying for candidacy status. And so you have to be a candidate for accreditation before you actually get accredited. So to apply to be a candidate, you have to have basically everything in place: curriculum, faculty, policies, space, resources, every single thing in place by a deadline. Our deadline happens to be December 1st of this year, very close to now. Then CAPTE sends an on-site visitor to make sure that you weren't lying, you weren't making it up, just putting stuff on paper. And so for us, that will occur in January. Then CAPTE makes a decision in April whether we are granted candidacy status or not. We're going to be confident, say yes, we're going to get it. Disclaimer, I have to tell everybody that there's a chance we won't, but I'm confident we will. And at that point in time, then we can officially enroll students in the program. Then what we have to do once we've gotten candidacy status is just do what we said we were going to do. Run the program. We'll get another visit basically just before our first class graduates. CAPTE will then determine whether we do have accreditation. And so we will be granted accreditation just prior to our first cohort graduating. So our first cohort will graduate from an accredited program.
Perfect.
I think I've described it enough times in my lifetime now that I can recite that in my sleep, but...
Well, that was perfect. That was perfect. So if you guys have more questions, just reach out to go to their website, Western Michigan. Google it. Like, again, if you can't find it, you're not searching hard enough. But yeah, that's everything in a nutshell of what you need to know. More questions, just contact them. But for my last questions, what are some of your pet peeves that you see from pre-PTs applying to school?
I would say a big one is when I get emails from students that start off, "Hey," like, don't do that. So they'll start off, "Hey," or they won't use a capital letter or punctuation. Or just say, "Hey, can you send me information on your program?" All that does is tell me you don't have enough initiative to go find something that is plainly on our website. So it's the message that's sent through the informality, through the, "Hey, just give me what I want." That's a huge turnoff, and I can speak for many program directors. We talk a lot amongst ourselves, and that's a big key. So being professional, that doesn't mean you have to go into long dissertations on emails by any means, but a professional salutation, clear questions about what you're looking for. Indicate that you've tried to find something, but you haven't been able. Those things are huge. They're just tiny pieces, but they're huge messages to the receiver. Yeah, so asking questions that really are, all it would take is a little bit internet search. Like what you just said is, if you can't find it, you're not looking hard enough, meaning it's right there. So if you're asking me these questions, that tells me that in PT school, you're gonna sit in front of me and just say, what's on the test? What do I have to know to pass this? You're not the type of student I want.
Mm, wow, so you might have to say that again.
I could say that again.
Hey, go for it.
But it's so true. It's like, it's how you present yourself. And if you're willing to approach your program director and just say, hey, can you give me this? And I know it's in 50 places on the internet or on our website, then I know you're going to sit in front of me in class and just wait to be spoon-fed. And that's not going to make a good PT. That's the bottom line. PTs have to be able to investigate on their own and dig and delve and ask hard questions and the what ifs. And I guarantee you, you're not going to find the answer to most patient questions on a Google search. Mm. You will not. So students who are so reliant on their phones for everything, every answer comes from a phone. You're going to be very disappointed with patients who sit in front of you and they aren't going to give you an answer, and nor is your phone. You got to really, really work to figure it out. And if you don't develop those skills to try to really figure things out, you're going to struggle. And I've seen it again and again and again. So there's that. Can I toss parents in?
Hey, that's what this podcast is for. Go for it. You have full reign. We want to hear this.
Oh my God. Please don't have mom or dad call. If you're going to be a graduate student and you can't make the phone call yourself, I have huge concerns about whether you're going to be able to call a physician. Or you're going to, can you call a hospital administrator? So it's really concerning to me when students who are applying for a doctoral level program send in mom or dad. Again, it sends a message. Either I'm too scared, I'm too insecure, I'm too lazy, I relied too much on my parents to do everything for me, and that's just status quo now. So all those messages come through what might be a convenience thing for a student. Every single encounter, you have to realize you're sending a message. Every single one. You are. And even if that doesn't come to me, and it goes to my admissions coordinator, that admissions coordinator, I have already gotten, we keep a log of the parents that call. Now, that's not always a negative. You have to discern what it is. Maybe there's a great reason. But if the great reason ends up being, I'm just collecting information for my daughter, why isn't your daughter collecting information for herself? I don't understand. So it's realizing what you're stepping into. You're stepping into a profession, first of all. You're stepping into a doctoral level profession, second. And you have to be prepared for that. And if you're not ready, go live life. Figure out that you're going to have to be responsible for your own path eventually. And then come back.
So now that you dropped bombs on us, that fire and slapped a couple people upside the head, What are some things that you love to see, or what are some things that make some students stand out over others in your search?
I would say a student who has really done some homework about a variety of settings. So one turnoff per se is a student who either writes about or sits in front of me and tells me that they want to do sports PT. Well, that's great. But you have to realize we're training you to be a generalist. We're training you to go in to an extended care facility and actually care for someone who might be elderly or who has dementia or who has Down syndrome. All those things that I want to be a sports PT, that's not glamorous. I don't care. You hopped into this profession to care for people, to take people and take responsibility for their care. Not just because they can pitch, you know, a fastball or they can score a touchdown or, you know, do a long jump. You know, it's people. That doesn't mean you can't specialize. But if you come in telling me, I only want to work with these people, then I know you might be a problem for my director of clinical education when you have to schedule your neuro rotation or your acute care rotation. And you're going to blow it off, or you're going to be unprofessional because I'm not going to work here anyway. No. That's just not cool. I mean, and the other piece of that is to not think that even in a sports setting, you're not going to have to pull in some of those skills. Some of those skills for neurology or for cognition, you know, with concussions. You better learn a lot of that deep neuro stuff. So it's the too narrow of a focus. And again, usually it's always sports. But just to come in with a broad understanding of what kind of a program you're getting into and what the profession is. So that's something that I really like to see, is somebody who's had, even if it's just conversations. Doesn't you have to log hours, but you can have an educated conversation about a realm of PT. Okay. I mean, my program doesn't require observational hours. I mean, I've talked to enough clinicians and I can't tell whether you sat and folded towels for 20 hours or if you really were in there asking questions. So you logged hours. You know, and it stresses clinical reliance on them giving me formal rotation spots. So I do want experience, but I'm not going to require a certain number of hours. That's my personal theory, which will probably be very different from some others. But I've lived this a long time, so I have a good basis for that. I mean, I think some of the stuff that really stands out again is to be able to give an explanation of failure. When have you failed in life? What did it mean to you? How did you grow from it? What did you learn? How did it change you? Are you afraid of failure? So I want to know a bit about that. But again, I need somebody sitting in front of me who's confident, who is... who has pretty high self-efficacy, so an internal locus of control instead of an external. So I know inside of me I can do this, as opposed to relying on all those external factors of awards and ribbons and pats on the back. All those things that are external, you're not going to get that day in, day out in the clinic. You will not. And if you're relying on that, you're going to get incredibly burned out very quickly, because nobody's going to give you high grades that the A on the exam that makes you all excited and gives you all kinds of energy, you aren't going to have that in the clinic. So you have to have it internally, you know, and know that you can make yourself happy and you can be your own success. And that's all you need. I think that probably covers it. I mean, there's a long list of things that I really like. I think I've already mentioned them. So
I love it. And since you are on that topic of, you know, having diverse students or just having a conversation about the diversity in PT, I saw that you were in the emergency department and in a pro bono clinic. How did that even come about?
Life circumstance. So the emergency department happened a very long time ago. I actually was hit by a car when I was riding a bike. And it was, I think, a year or two after I had graduated from PT school. So I was working in a hospital outpatient clinic, and I was riding home on my bike home, and I got hit by a car. Landed in the ED, and as I'm lying there, beaten and bruised and battered and bloody, I'm like, why isn't anybody here from my profession to teach me how to move and to teach me how to use the crutches that I'm supposed to use that were handed to me in a cellophane package, by the way, or the stairs that I had to do. I mean, so it was just a question of, if I landed in here, and thank God I know what to do, but what if I didn't? Who's going to teach these folks that they can move, first of all, how to do it all, how to be safe, and then even just like what the prognosis might be. So I was given none of that in the emergency department, and so that sparked my interest, and it took a long time for me to get there, but then I made that when I entered my doctoral program, my academic doctoral program, that question was still there, and so I made that the basis for my research. And so the rest is history. I did get, when I was faculty, I also worked in the emergency department a weekend or two a month, just to kind of keep my hand in it and to keep the research going. Fascinating area of practice. It's starting to really get some traction. The question we most often get is, well, what do you even do in an ED? And our response is, what don't we do? Chronic low back pain comes in there all the time. Car accidents, you know, ACL tears, wounds, vestibular problems, elderly falls, you name it. And we can do a lot with a lot of the orthopedic and some of the neurological, a lot of the vestibular issues that come in there. So that's the ED. We're still doing research. My practice has dried up a little bit since my move to Kalamazoo, but I've already met with a medical director at one of the local hospitals who's very interested. So in my spare time, I will pursue that here in one of the emergency departments. The pro bono thing was something, one of the biggest blessings in my life that fell in my lap. When I was a graduate assistant working in my doctoral degree, I was asked if I would take over, the university was just starting a pro bono clinic. I thought it was already established and up and running. And so I was asked, hey, would you mind taking students there once a week for experience? Sure, no big deal. And then I got there and I'm like, oh, you haven't even started this thing yet. You want me to start it? Okay, sure, I'll go do that. So anyway, we built it. I practiced there for 13 years. One of my favorite things I've ever done in life, honestly. The population, you know, I think a lot of PT students are very sheltered, and they don't really understand poverty. They don't really understand what it's like to live with a very low education level, with health disparities that would blow your mind, the amount of abuse that's out there, and that's physical, emotional, sexual abuse, substance abuse. And so, I mean, these are my favorite patients because they gave me such a taste of life that I really never had, and an understanding of humanity. And I'm forever grateful for those 13 years. And I will pursue it again here when I have time. But those folks who tend to be neglected in the healthcare system and forgotten or dismissed because they don't have resources, because they don't have an education to understand how to navigate the system, they are incredibly grateful to the care that you give them. And it's just, it's the biggest win I could imagine.
Ooh. Wow. Jeez. It's now that I'm graduated and finished and you even called me your colleague, it's kind of, you know how free PTs that are listening, you probably feel intimidated and scared to apply to PT school. Now talking to the superwoman PT like this, it's like, man, I gotta step it up. I got a lot to live up to. But so this is just amazing. Everything you've been able to do and accomplish in your career is just, me personally, is just super inspiring. And I know it'll be super inspiring to pre-PTs, especially. But for the last question I have, if you were to go back and speak to the younger pre-PT version of yourself, you know, second time applying, first time applying, either one, doesn't really matter. What would you probably tell them now, being where you are today?
Probably that the path and the course you set for yourself, it's probably not going to look that way. And if you stress about it, you're going to make yourself miserable, because life throws you things. You got to be able to go with curveballs. I did not know that I would be going into academia. I figured it out along the way, but you know, my naive self was like, oh, I'm going to be a PT for the rest of my life. Well, no. I mean, I'm still a PT, obviously, but then the academic bug hit me, and then various other things came along. And so I guess it's, don't close yourself off from those little opportunities that you have no idea where, that they may just blossom into this crazy thing, be a long-term thing or a short-term thing, but this profession and life in general is full of opportunities. You just have to have the guts to take them sometimes. You know, I would imagine that when you were applying to PT school, you did not envision yourself running pre-PT grind or podcasts, talking to people like myself or other PTs, and doing a great, great service to a lot of individuals, you know, and you saw a window and you took it, and I'm guessing you're pretty grateful. So I talked to so many students who just have this, their life course is set, and it makes me sad, and I really hope that they figure out. And sometimes you just gotta let it come, and it's gonna work out. And if you try too hard, you're gonna miss some stuff along the way.
Guys, this is such a powerful episode. You guys just have to listen to it over and over again. If you're about to send in that essay, or about to hit e-submit on the application, or if you're applying next cycle or whatever it is, share it with your friends. Because a lot of times myself and Joseph try to kind of give you this window into what the other side of the chair looks like, the other side of that laptop, the other side of the phone. But sometimes I understand, you know, it might kind of blow off your head. Because you're like, who are these guys? They just graduated. They don't know anything. It's whatever. But coming from the person themselves, who's actually telling you this, telling you how they feel, telling you that you're sending a message with everything that you're doing. We've said it before. Your application doesn't start on July 1st. It starts 3 years before you apply, when you take Anatomy 1 for the first time. It starts, you know, that second year when you're in that teacher's classroom about to ask them for a letter of recommendation in a few months. That's when it starts. And that's what I think a lot of this episode was about. You're sending a message through your whole application process, no matter where it starts for you, if you're non-traditional or going through that traditional path, whatever it is. When you decide to make that decision, that's when it is. And you're sending a message every single step of the way. So be very conscious and very mindful of that, because that can make a huge difference in your journey and your path to PT school, your acceptance and all that. And that's not to discourage you if you know, made some mistakes along the way. You already heard that I had to apply twice, that Dr. Pruth had to apply twice. So that's not the end of the world. The premise of this episode is to make sure you learn from those mistakes and you take these wise words that you're hearing from PT school themselves and making those changes for the future. So I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your extremely, extremely busy schedule to talk to myself and all the pre-PTs listening. And before we go, you can just let them know where they can find you, website, email, all that stuff, if you're comfortable with them reaching out, and any last words you'd like to say.
This main focus, I've got to get my accreditation done. So yeah, I don't have a ton of time, but I love talking to students. I love talking to potential students and again, doing the same thing that you're doing and just guiding that next generation. So you know, you can find, again, a Google search of Western Michigan University Physical Therapy, and our site will pop up, and there's contact information for myself, for all of our faculty. We have what's called our manager of recruitment, who is our designated PT guide. And so she handles basically all the applications through the admissions process. She knows everything there is to know about our program, so you can talk to her. If she can't handle something, she brings it right to me. You know, if you're in the area, I'd be happy to meet with you, go have coffee or whatever, I'll be around. So it's all about who's going to represent this profession next. And because I'm not going to be in it forever, but I'm responsible at least partially for saying who does. It's one of my favorite things to build that next generation and get to know them. Again, they're colleagues. So, and thankfully, many of those students have become colleagues, but they also remain friends. And that's one a huge joy of mine in life, is staying connected with, they know that I call them my cubs. They're my cubs. And I raise them a little bit, and I love them. So.
Wow. Again, thank you so much, Dr. Pruth, for joining us on this episode. Again, you heard where you can reach out to her. Google search Western Michigan University. Go to their contact list, faculty list, whatever it is. Search that. Email them whatever questions you have. Of course, you know where to find us. www.preptgrind.com for any other questions or information, anything you need. You already know we're there to help. Again, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. For our listeners, we will see you on another episode of the Pre-PT Grind podcast. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Pre-PT Grind podcast. This show has been brought to you by the Pre-PT Success Program, a program designed to take pre-PT students and help them become excellent DPT school candidates without wasting years of frustration during the application process. To learn and master Pre-PT Grind's six-step process that will get you into physical therapy school, the Pre-PT Success Program is exactly what you have been looking for. Reach out to us at contactpreptgrind.com, aka our Facebook Messenger. And thank you once again for joining us on this episode. We look forward to seeing you next week on the Pre-PT Grind podcast.